attracted to them, you fall in love, you know, you're Twitter-pated, and it's lovely, and you commit your lives to each other, and then reality sets in, and you see the good, the bad, and the ugly. You see that person at their best and at their worst. You wake up, and he sees your morning face, and she smells your morning breath. You know, and you say things that, you know, you express your love to each other, and then you say things you regret and you wouldn't say to anybody else. It's this crazy relationship, this gift that God gives us, but it's hard, and it's sometimes messy, and it's sometimes hard to navigate. And there's this book called Sacred Marriage by Gary Thomas, and he posits this: what if God designed marriage to make us holy more than to make us happy? Think about that. What if God designed marriage to make us holy more than to make us happy? Is there better sandpaper than marriage? I mean, really, to rub off the rough edges in your life? It's like it brings out everything that's inside, like it exposes the hidden motives in your heart and your attitude. And really, when you think about marriage that way as a means to holiness, it's like it kind of brings stuff to the surface if you can allow it to and let God kind of sift through some stuff. Now, the problem in marriage a lot of times is we take it from this approach that is common. You might have heard this phrase, it's said quite a bit, is that marriage is 50-50. Now, I don't agree with that. I think taking that approach, a 50-50, is a wrong way to look at marriage. In essence, it says, okay, if I give 50, I'm going to wait here, I'm going to give 50, and then I expect you to give 50 in return. That's not really God's way of looking at things. Really, that's a conditional love. On the condition that you're going to reciprocate, I'm going to give you 50. But really, when we enter into a marriage relationship, we're saying, I'm giving 100. I'm giving 100. I'm gonna give freely. I'm gonna serve freely. I'm gonna love freely. I'm gonna give 100. I'm gonna give everything that I've got to give. I'm gonna give. Now the hope is that that's gonna be reciprocated. The hope is that you'd get that in return, but not the condition. It's not the condition that I'm gonna get that in return. So, at the same time, we all have expectations. We have all these expectations in marriage. And some of them are right. We have expectations. We expect this and this, and we have certain ideals, certain thoughts of going, this is what I expect from this person, and this is how I expect for this to work out. We're right, expectations up here. Now, often the problem with expectations is this. Reality is down here. So you have this gap between expectations and reality. And the gap in the middle, that's where frustration lies. When you have certain expectations that aren't being met, there's this gap between what's really happening and what your expectations are. And so you have two options other than sitting in the frustration. You have an option of one is lowering your expectations. Now, this is appropriate when, say, your expectations haven't been clearly defined. Your spouse doesn't even know what those expectations are. You're just going, well, he should just know. He should just read my mind. And your spouse is going, I had no idea. Now, that's when either expectations need to be defined or need to be lowered to go, am I trying to make my spouse someone they're not? Am I trying to go, my spouse is, I want them to be like this, and I want to change their personality and go, I expect you to do this, this, and this. And that's not even on their radar. They would never even think of that. Sometimes we need to lower expectations if we're trying to put them in a box and someone that they've never even been designed to be. The other reason we'd have to lower our expectations is if we are expecting our spouse to complete me. Thank you, Jerry Maguire, for that one. You complete me. Now, we have this unrealistic expectation that they have to be our all in all, our everything, they are our dream. They're gonna fulfill all of our hopes, our dreams, our desires, our needs. That is an unrealistic expectation. And so if yes, your expectation, that needs to be lowered. So maybe in that scenario, you're expecting your spouse to be someone that only Jesus can fill. Now, second option is you have these expectations and you're going, these are fair expectations. They've been defined. They're totally appropriate. So this, the reality of actions or attitude, whatever it is, that needs to be raised. And in that scenario, a crucial conversation needs to happen. So if you've got expectations that aren't being met, then that's when you have a talk. And we're going to unpack that and what keys to some crucial conversations. We're going to talk about that in a minute. We're thinking for this morning, it would be way more beneficial not for one person to talk, but for us to have a panel discussion. So in a bit here, I'm going to call up our panel of experts. Everyone's laughing because you know there's no such thing as an expert in marriage. We're all just like experimenting and it's all just, we're all just a mess trying to figure it out. But there's some guidelines to go. God has given us some wisdom and some, in his word. He's given us some principles that we can, follow after. And so we're going to discuss some of that stuff. But I want to take, one moment and address, for those of you who are single, or maybe you're widowed or divorced, I recognize that some of you aren't married in this room. This can be a painful subject, and it can bring up some painful feelings. And so we just want to let you know that we're sensitive to that, and we're praying for God's healing in your life and restoration. And we're hoping that this morning can bring some hope. You may be in this room, and marriage is the farthest thing on your mind. You're not even thinking about that. You may be a teenager in this room, and that's way down the road. We just want to say this. First of all, tuck this away for later for some of you. And then secondly, for all of us, we all know people who are married. We all have people in our lives, whether they're family, friends, coworkers, that we can take some of this and help bring life and bring wisdom to other people. A lot of times, messages and words and scripture aren't just for us to consume, but it's for us to give away. God uses that for us to be a blessing to other people. So look at it with that lens, is how can I take some of this stuff, if it doesn't directly apply to me, to bless someone else. So without further ado, I want to call our panel up. Jeff's going to join me on the stage. We're going to be a part of this panel. We've been married for 16 years and have 5 kids. You can go ahead and, that was the early years. We were dating in that picture. Just little babies. We've got Paul and Dawn Lieb here. They have been married for 26 years. Look at that handsome couple. They've got 3 kids and 2 of them are in college. So they've got some years on us. Matt and Bonnie Green, they've been married for 14 years and have 3 kids. So, here we go.
Why are you laughing so much at my
face,
picture?
Man.
That's why I don't ever shave with a razor. It's too skinny and I look like that. I'm 14.
So this morning we're just going to we're gonna have a discussion. And we're going to talk about some of these topics and relating to marriage and...
I don't know about any of you, but I loved the part where she talked about lowering the expectations. Let's talk about that a little bit, you know? Guys, anybody, are you with me? I mean, that's...
I let out a little bit of a, like, that's good noise, and I got kind of a side eye from... So, warning, as we move ahead, don't do too much nudging of the partner next to you or... that's good.
Yeah.
Maybe later bring it up. What did you think about that one part? I don't know.
That's wisdom.
So
that's
wisdom
good.
Right there.
Well, let's talk about conflict in marriage first, because that's a fun one. Because, not that anybody here has ever been in conflict in their marriage.
I've heard about it.
Yeah. So how do you approach conflict in your marriage? We'll start with that question. Anybody can chime in.
Not all at once.
Yeah. Yeah, you want to tell? So Yeah, we've been married 26 years, and we were first married. We moved right from being married right down to Springfield, Missouri, into Bible college. So we were really, you talk about all the stressors in life, right? New jobs, moving, marriage. We just did it all right away, right? Getting out the door. And one day, I don't know, we were probably 2 years into our marriage or so, and I'll let Dawn finish the story.
I said, hey, I'm going to fight you today. And
she was picking a fight with me.
Yeah, because someone said, well, everybody has fights. I thought, no, we don't. And so I thought, we should do this. So we fit in.
And so she kind of pushed me. She was like, what are we going to fight about? We're going to fight today. I'm like, we're not. What do we got to fight about? You know? And she said, well, you're supposed to fight. You know, in marriage, we're supposed to fight. And there's fights, aren't there? And I said, I don't know. And, you know, looking back over 26 years, honestly, now, for us, it's just how people, we can talk about how conflict kind of comes out in relationships. For us, we're just not that way.
Non-confrontational is right here. When we have had disagreements, I often go to writing because I cry, as some of you maybe even saw today. So I go to tears, and I hate that, and so I sometimes will write things out and say, you need to read this so you know how I feel without me crying. So that's what I do, and then it gets somewhat resolved. Yeah.
So we're not the... Some people experts. Just, man, you wear your emotions on your sleeve. Some people are wired that way. And so when you get into conflict, it just kind of comes up. Some of you, maybe it's the passive-aggressive stuff where you just give them the silent treatment for months on end or something, right? I don't know. This is probably, I don't know how many years ago. 50, we were living here by then. And we had a lousy summer one time.
Terrible summer. Really
and,
bad summer.
We just weren't talking to each other, really. And, I mean, it's pathetic to even say. But there was about 2-3 months. I don't know. We were in June, July, and eventually she wrote me a note saying, we need to talk.
This is real talk here, people.
Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, we do. And we sat down and we talked. And that was a start. So we're not brawlers. We're kind of quiet in our...
Now, do you guys want to address anything
real,
else?
Yeah. Real similar to you. My wife's Italian and was raised by two parents from Brooklyn. So,
so totally similar.
Kind of the opposite end. We go in explosions, would you say?
Yeah, like mini microbursts
mini explosions.
Of anger.
Yeah.
Which I think, not, you guys sound so nice. Like, that sounds like just, oh, we should write each other notes. And
we should try that.
And I'm like, what's wrong with you? We just say it all, like whatever we're feeling is just out there, I guess. But that's not always a good thing.
Which I think speaks to some of how we've gotten better over the years because we've learned each other. And, like, there's not any one, this is how you do conflict. Everybody's different and has their own ways of handling confrontation and conflict. Some people like to avoid. I'm more of an avoider in our relationship. Dawn, I got you. We'll rather just kind of... You know, brush, sweep it under the rug, and we'll be fine, and we don't really need to dig deep. We don't need to get into it. And then that tends to lead to bigger blow-ups because Bonnie's going, we need to talk about this or whatever. And so we've learned a little more about each other, and that enables us to broach the topics appropriately with each other. And not in the beginning, it was more just, like you said, what's wrong with you?
And I think when you're in conflict, the whole point is oneness. I mean, the whole point is to... get back to unity, and it's not to win an argument or who's right. And that was so much of our earlier marriage. I mean, before we had smartphones and Google at your fingertips, we would fight about the dumbest stuff. Anybody with me? No, that's not the actress in that movie. No, it's this person. I mean, the fights that you get into are like so ridiculous. And I think we've just learned that when there's confrontation, we have to remember that oneness, that the whole point is to come back to unity. So, you know, I know in many people in the room, you know, conflict is just a part of life. And there are times, like Carrie said it, you know, we can be sandpaper people to each other and get on each other's nerves and do things, but the whole, you have to get back to what is our goal here. And the goal isn't to pick sides or who's the winner and who's the loser. It's to build up your marriage.
I remember when that hit me, like that I was approaching conflict in marriage as like a winner takes all, like I'm going in to try to defeat the enemy. And like when I realized that, like that is, I mean,
thank you for that.
But, you know, but like, and it for real had to, this sounds crazy, but like it had to hit me where it was like,
I didn't have to hit him.
Yeah, she didn't have to hit me. The thought hit me, okay? But where, like, the point of this is for us to get healthy. The point is for us to work through the tension point in our marriage. The point is not for me to tell her off. The point is not for me to get something off my chest. And if you're not dealing with conflict in a healthy way, it feels that way. Like, I have to unload this on them because I've been carrying it. I've been sweeping it under the rug. I've been stuffing it or whatever it is. And now I just have to drop this bomb on them instead of, no, we've got this issue in our marriage. And the point is for us to, like Bonnie said, to work through it as one, to get through it together and find a way out to the other side. That is a mindset shift that I had to go through. And I don't remember who it was that said it to me or if I read it in a book, but just recently I heard somebody say that most conflict, most frustration in relationships happens when overreaction meets underreaction. And I heard that or read that or whatever it was, and I went, that is the epitome of my marriage. Seriously, we are polar opposites in how we process a lot of different things, and I don't know if you want to chime in on any of this, but
I might overreact when I start talking
about this. Possibly.
I am classic overreactor. So something happens.
I asked her if she wanted to chime in because I didn't want to put that information out there. I will let her put her own information out there. So, honey, do you want to speak to that overreaction, underreaction?
Sure. So I overreact. And then because I'm overreacting, Jeff underreacts. And because he's underreacting, I'm overreacting more. And it just
And then I'm underreacting more.
Polarizing.
You're not even looking at the other perspective.
Can
and,
you get
know.
Tickets to this?
It's pretty entertaining.
Actually, you have an office that's right next to our office where we work together. So you've already got tickets. The walls in our offices are paper thin. So as everyone has discovered in the last little bit here. So... but even realizing that, half of what I'm doing is in response to what I feel her deficiency is and vice versa. I see things a particular way and I think that it's this way and she's upset that it's not this way. And I'm like, well, hold on, you know, and we've had to go, okay, we're actually probably closer to being on the same page than what we think we are. And if I can, again, not try to win the argument, but I can try to hear what it is that she's saying to me. And what's going on, most of the time it's like, oh, we're actually kind of saying the same thing, but there's just a small degree of difference in how we see it. So,
and I would say little things like that we've all kind of learned along the way, most, if not all the time, came from some outside of source, that we saw a video of somebody teaching on marriage, or we read a book, or we met with a counselor, or someone else taught us this thing, and we're sort of like, oh my gosh, the light bulb just came on. And so I would just want to recommend investing in your marriage in looking for tools like that, videos you can watch or books you can go through together, things you can read. We have just a plug for CLF specifically. We have access to a website called Right Now that has dozens and dozens and dozens of awesome resources for marriages, and to sit down and watch them, even if you have to watch them alone to start and your spouse isn't interested. The more you can understand and learn about your personality, the personality of your spouse, the way God made them, the way God made you as a couple, you start to learn more about that, and all of a sudden you're like, hey, this makes sense why we've been doing things this way. And it makes sense that to change that and make it better is just a little bit of a shift, and we can make so much easier way through that. And then I would say also that there's sort of a stigma around marriage counseling and actually meeting with a counselor, but don't buy into that stupid stuff. And I would say we've met with a marriage counselor in times in our marriage where we weren't really clicking and we weren't on, you know, firing on all cylinders, but it wasn't like we were at the brink of divorce. We didn't go when things were so bad. This was the last resort. And I would say, don't wait. If your marriage, you're just feeling like you're out of sync and you need some insight, get some insight from a pastor, meet with one of us, meet with somebody else, find someone that does marriage counseling, and just get together and get it out on the table and learn about yourselves, learn about what's been going on and how you can make some changes and understand each other, understand the situation better. You're going to say something, Dawn?
I am. There are times where, you know, we don't have a lot of conflict, but there are times, can I even say it, this week, he said, I asked a question, he answered me, and I thought, you're speaking the English language, I am sure, because I know those words, but you do not make sense to me in any way. And we both said, we need to come back to this at a different time. And so sometimes in conflict, you put it aside until you can talk about it at the right time.
Yeah. That's really smart, because I know sometimes, like Matt said, I want to talk about things, and I want to talk about things like all the time. Like if it's midnight, I want to talk about things, and Matt's half asleep, and I want to broach this really deep, serious conversation, and Matt's like, what? And I'm like, you never listen to me.
I can fake it for a little bit, but then I'm just like, oh my gosh.
So, I mean, there's times where if there's things you need to talk about, there are appropriate times and not appropriate times. There's times where there's stress, and there's times where you just need to wait a day or two, and the Bible talks about how a gentle answer turns away wrath in Proverbs. And, you know, you're both stressed and you're both mad at each other. You're just going to keep, you know, feeding that fire. The Proverbs also says that fire goes out for lack of fuel. And if you're just saying mean things and you're being spiteful and you're annoyed, it's probably not the best time to talk about stuff. And I've learned that sometimes you just take a pause, or you just go, you know what, we're going to talk about this tomorrow. And we both had a good night's sleep. We both had a snack and a nap, and just like a toddler. And then you're able to
snack
go.
Snack time, nap time.
It's like you're so much more pleasant to each other. And I just think, you know, a lot of it's like proper timing, and it's also the way you say things that you're talking about. Like, I think I know what you're saying, but we can say things in a way that's either really mean and kind of cutting, or you can say things in a way that you're really seeking to understand. I know one thing we've learned is that sometimes you know your spouse so well that you already assume you know what they're going to say, you know what they're thinking, you know what they mean. And I know when we're in conversation now, I say a lot, okay, so what I think you're saying is this. Am I correct? Like, is this what you think about this? Because there are times that I've made assumptions and times that I've already filled in the blanks, but I'm not really understanding you or really hearing you. And I think that's gone a long way for us to resolve conflict. Yeah.
You know, and a lot of what we talk about with conflict, it comes down to communication and how we're communicating to each other. And when we talked earlier, addressed having that crucial conversation. Let's talk about some ways that we can have those crucial conversations. Like, what are some tips when, especially when things are heated and like stakes are high, emotions are high, how do you approach that without avoiding the conversation? How do you approach that conversation when it's a crucial conversation?
I think for me, Matt, you said I'm not supposed to use Ephesians chapter 5 because you wanted to say it, but
I had dibs, but whatever.
Okay. but what Carrie, you can quote it exactly then. But what Carrie said at the beginning about marriage not being a 50-50, but it's a 100, and then you're hoping for reciprocation of 100%. I mean, that's really Ephesians 5, really one of the most well-quoted passages on marriage. And it says at the very beginning, you know, the verses that everyone, especially in our culture, gets hung up on are, you know, one of the first verses that talks about that wives are supposed to submit to their husbands, and everyone gets their dander up over that, you know. But if you read the verse before that, what it says is the instructions for Christian households start out by saying, submit yourselves then one to another. In other words, you both submit to each other. That's the baseline for marriage. It starts there. And then all the rest of that passage is doing is unpacking what that looks like for a wife to respect her husband and to submit herself to her husband. And then the word submit is not used specifically in the husband's instruction, but it says, love your wives as Christ loved the church, which was he gave himself up to the point of death for it. I can't think of a better submission than that, right? Surrendering yourself to that. So when you read that passage, it's like, marriage is meant to be this submitting myself to my spouse. I don't wait for them, but I submit myself to them. I'm in the relationship to be a blessing to them, to honor them, to serve them. I'm trusting that they're in the relationship to do the exact same thing, that they are there to honor me, not they, she. There's one spouse that I have. I just realized that I'm using the plural. It's a little weird. That she is in the relationship for the same reason, to be a blessing to me, to honor me, to love me. And so it's almost like you're trying to outdo each other and like, no, I'm going to, you know, I love you more. No, I love you more.
You hang up first.
Yeah. Okay. But like on a really deep level going, I am 100% going to love and honor you. And that with whatever you do with that, that's how I'm going to love you. That's the way that I'm going to interact with you. And I think when you talk about a crucial conversation, you have to start from that point going, I'm coming to it again not to tell them off, but I'm coming to them because I want this relationship to be good. And I see a blind spot in their life, or they're doing damage to me right now and they don't realize that they're doing damage to me, or they realize but they don't realize the extent of it. And so I'm going to come, and I think probably the biggest tip for me is just like, I'm going to assume that they have my best interest in mind, the way that I have their best interest in mind. And we've talked about that before, the gap between reality and expectations. You can fill that gap in with either assuming the worst about somebody else, or you can believe the best about them. And so I'm going to choose to approach it as I go into conflict. I don't assume the best or believe the best and just not have the tough conversation, but I go into the tough conversation going, this woman loves me. She stuck it out with me for 16 years. She's seen me at my worst. She hasn't gone anywhere. I know that it has not been easy for her. She loves me. And so I can go into it knowing she wants what's best for me, and I can approach that conversation that way. So I think that's where you have to start.
It's super easy to go into it going, I've told him this before. He knows it. She knows it. Mm-hmm. She's just doing this to get under my skin. She's whatever. And in, like you said, if you sort of evaluate yourself, we were actually going through a marriage series in our life group, and one of the teachers said something that stuck out to me. It was that how many times would those areas of conflict and those kind of blow-ups be lessened if before we went into it pointing the finger at them, we evaluated how much of our own selfish ambition is driving what we're upset about. And most of the time it's our own selfish people inside that want to be comfortable. I want to be lazy. I want to be served. I want things to be good for me. And then I get annoyed because it's not working out perfectly that way. And that's where we end up, you know, there's conflict. If we allow the Holy Spirit, allow God to deal with us first and go, actually, most of this stuff that I'm feeling is because I'm sinful and this sin man inside of me is rising up and wanting things because I'm prideful and because I'm lazy and because I want comfort. And then we sort of allow God to deal with us, and then we come in and go, okay, yeah, I was upset at you for this. But, you know, it takes a bunch of that fuel out of that fire. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and in the Ephesians 5 verse, for some reason, wives submit to your husbands is a wildly more well-known verse than men love your wives like Christ loved the church, which feels to me like an even heavier call to love your spouse in the same way that Jesus loved the church. If you weren't familiar, we just celebrated communion because Jesus allowed himself to be killed and tortured for the church. I should be loving Bonnie in every situation. With that pile of dishes, I should be evaluating that situation with the same love and sacrifice that Christ did for the church. Right? All of a sudden, you're like, okay.
Well, hold on. That, I mean, let's not
get carried away.
That's a little extreme.
People getting ideas here.
We can't let it get out of balance and feel like there's some sort of patriarchal, the man's first, and he needs to be served first, and then later on, the wife can be loved by him. But there is an equal giving and serving of each other, and submitting to each other, loving each other, and there's oneness and wholeness in that when that's healthy going back and forth.
And if anything, the responsibility for the male, if you read it that way, is that the male has first responsibility, that he doesn't get the right to sit back and wait for the wife to function in a particular way, but he goes first in dying to himself. I mean, that's, if you want to read into it any kind of privilege, that's the privilege that's there. So I think you have to start there when you talk about conflict or crucial conversations with other people.
I'd say practically speaking, avoiding the terms always and never.
You always say that, Carrie.
Yeah.
Because automatically, so you say that, you always do that. What triggers in you all the right away? There's defensiveness. Right away, I'm thinking, not always. I mean,
yeah, I can remember one time I didn't do that. You don't know.
So you're shooting yourself in the foot by going, you always or you never, because right away they're thinking of defenses, going, that's not true.
Are you saying a better way to win an argument is to not use the word never?
I'm always thinking of a better way to win an argument. You know,
a better way to arrive at oneness.
There you go.
Yeah, that's what my heart
is. Like always and never.
Assuming the best.
Yes, there you go.
Well, what is, you know, a lot of times in some marriages, there are no fly zones. There are things that you just don't talk about. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about the no fly zones. Is that ever, is that ever a good idea to have like a no-fly zone? Or what do you do when you approach that, when your spouse gets like, oh, nope, don't talk about that?
Well, I have definite thoughts about this. I feel like I have definite thoughts about everything. So I feel like when it comes to no-fly zones or things that, you know, we don't broach or we don't talk about, I think that is a definite indicator of unhealth. That if in a marriage you can't talk about a certain topic, there's some sort of like shame or trauma or something connected to that, that you're not allowing your spouse, having the vulnerability to let your spouse speak into that. And I'm not saying we haven't dealt with that. There's been different family relationships. I mean, when you get married, both of you guys bring baggage into your relationship. You bring in great stuff too, but there's also a lot of baggage you can bring in. And I think when you can let your guard down and not be prideful, and you're able to let your spouse kind of speak into some of those, you know, no-fly zones, you actually can find a lot of healing, and you find someone you can really trust. I mean, I think for us, Matt and I got married really young, and you don't even know you don't have no-fly zones. I mean, you just blow up about things, and it's not till you read books or see counselors or even get to know yourself, for that matter. I mean, at 21 and 22, I can't say we really knew ourselves. I mean, we couldn't even rent a car, do you know yourself as a person, you know? So I think we kind of had to do a lot of growing up together. So I think we've had to realize over the years that if there's that little thing in you that's like, I don't want to talk about it, I don't want to go there, there's something in me that now goes, okay, what's that about? Why am I reacting that way? And why am I, you know, reacting that way to you?
And it's kind of, I think, a sign of an area that there's intimacy that's lacking. And that when you're married and you become one, there's supposed to be an intimacy there. And we relate the word intimacy with sex, and it's not, they're not one and the same. Yes, sex comes when you're intimate, but intimacy is that vulnerability with each other, that I can allow myself to be exposed, the deeper parts of who I am and the stuff that I don't really like about myself or the things that I have this baggage in with Bonnie, because we have intimacy with each other and emotional intimacy. And when there's areas that are off limits, we can't talk about that, or every time we do, I fly off the handle or whatever, that's just showing an area of me that isn't open to her, and it's not, there isn't intimacy in that area. And I think that's a kind of a red flag for a marriage.
Years ago, we heard of a couple that had a plan for the no-fly zones, and they called it the State of the Marriage Meeting. And once a year, they got together and they talked about finances, they talked about things that are hard to talk about, and they knew it was going to be a no-motion zone and a time for them to share their thoughts without judgment, without offending one another. So it could be little things, you know, annoying habits that get in the way of lots of things. But
Dawn, do you want to talk about any of Paul's annoying habits?
I want to talk about a lot of them. I wasn't allowed that today.
We don't have much time.
So if you need to set aside a time, you know, maybe an annual thing, maybe every couple of months, do you need to talk about your finances? It's a sticky wicket for a lot of marriages. So allow yourself to say, you know, we need to plan this, and we know that, you know, April's a hard time because of taxes, so maybe do it in July, or we need to talk about it before April. You need to talk about those things together.
And I would say that's really important, again, on your personal style. So if you're comfortable, you know, if you're the kind of person that wears your emotions on your sleeve, you, like we just talked about different conflict styles. Our conflict style is not very open. We'll both stuff it or avoid it or whatever. It's really important then, especially for people who are wired like me or Dawn, to be very intentional about being able to communicate with one another, like to set up a time where we're just going to say a state of the marriage day or dinner or something where there's no kids around, where we can just be together and talk through some of the things that maybe have been sticking in our mind for a while, so that they don't get into that, you know, most things, you know, communication is the key, right? I mean, in conflict, how much conflict is caused because of miscommunication? And if we just understand each other better, a lot of that goes away, you know. I mean, doesn't matter what the topic is, whether it's kids or money or my job or how you squeeze the toothpaste, right? It doesn't matter what the issue is. If we can learn to communicate around those things, the issue kind of goes away. One of my favorite verse. I think just in relationships, you know, Paul writes in Romans that as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. Mm-hmm. Now, living at peace with everyone is like almost impossible, right? I mean, because people are just, we can't control what people do, and I can't control how Don's going to respond necessarily. But as far as it depends on me, right?
Yeah.
And so that's the, you know, what do I own of the expectations? Mm-hmm. You know, as far as it depends on me, the believing in the best, all of that. Mm-hmm. If I do those things, and as far as it depends on me, I live that way towards Dawn, or frankly anybody else in our lives. If we give people that opportunity, that respect, and learn to listen, I like what Bonnie had to say about learning to listen to people, being empathetic. Not just, you know, it's good to reflect what you're hearing, but it's also good to reflect what they're feeling, too. So I think I hear you saying this, and I don't know. I feel like we're not, even like this week, we were talking about this one thing, and we were clear coming on the issue the same way. We just didn't get a word defined right. And we sat there at breakfast, and wait a minute. You're not talking about the same thing I am, right? But listening for each other and listening for each other to understand feeling, you know, not just the words and all that, but understanding feeling, too.
And if you think about it, oftentimes, at least for me, I tend to show a little more of the fruits of the Spirit to people outside of my home. In my home, I'm done. You know, I did that already today.
It's so, just you. It's just you, Don.
We get the scraps. You know.
So am I pouring love and patience and faithfulness and gentleness into my marriage more than I'm doing it to others? Because really, this is the one that's the most important. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You people are nice. I like you.
I
was going to move on.
No, after you, honey.
So we talked about this whole idea of giving 100. Sometimes in reality, I mean, we talk in sickness and in health, in good times and bad. Sometimes there's sickness and bad. And so how do we respond? How do we function that way? How does marriage survive hard times? Let's talk about that.
I think it's not the whole, like, if there's going to be hard times, it's when hard times happen. And, you know, Matt and I aren't that old. We haven't been married that long, but we've gone through hardships in the last 14 years. We've had a miscarriage. We've gone through job loss. You've had a diagnosis of cancer. I mean, we just had some bumps along the road that you don't know those curveballs are coming. And I think how our marriage survived is you have to have the same foundation, and that's Jesus Christ. I mean, I think if you are working from the same foundation and your mind and your eyes are on the same thing, no matter what comes your way, I think you're able to do it hand in hand, side by side, because your focus is on the same thing. And I know you're talking about the 50-50. We've had seasons where it's been 80-20, 90-10. I mean, depending on what the person's going through, you as a spouse sometimes carry more of the weight or more of the load because of what they're going through. And you can't allow yourself to be resentful during those times, but I think if you lean in to God and His strength, you're able to see them the way God sees them.
We had sort of a mentality that we both had before we even started dating, and that was sort of a picture of a triangle. And if you picture me over here and Bonnie over here, that not knowing who was at the pinnacle, but if we both just pursued God with all that we were and pursued allowing Him to be the one that completed us and made us whole, that eventually we'd cross with somebody and it would be this another person that's doing the same thing, that's pursuing God. And it kind of speaks to that, not putting the weight of completing you on your spouse. If you are not married yet or you're not dating yet and you're in that position, shift that, if that's not already your heart, and make that your goal, that you're pursuing God with all that you are and wanting Him to be the one that completes you and makes you whole. And then if somebody crosses that path, or when somebody crosses that path doing the same thing and He brings you together, you're that much stronger. If you're already married and that hasn't been the goal, you need to have a conversation about shifting that in yourself and with your spouse, and how you guys can stop looking to each other to fulfill all of the deepest needs inside of you, and look, both turn to God and allow Him to fulfill you and make you whole, make you complete, and then together you can do that together to serve Him and lift Him up and find your completeness and wholeness in Him. And there's a underlying foundation and strength that will carry you through hard times when that's the focus, when Christ is the center and the foundation of that relationship.
That's good.
Jeff and I coined a term several years, kind of the early years in our marriage, called Team Us. And it was we were going through a more difficult time, and it's easiest to kind of attack your spouse when you're going through that, mm-hmm. to kind of take advantage of them, to all the stuff that's going on internally or externally, to kind of put that towards your spouse.
And in that season of our lives, it was external stuff. It was jobs. It was all the stuff outside of us that felt like it was just hammering down on us in that season, and we were turning against each other. Like, we were allowing that to drive a wedge between us and didn't even realize that that was happening until one day it clicked for us. I can still remember we were standing in our kitchen in our house in New Mexico when it kind of hit us, and we were like, we are attacking the wrong thing here. Like, we're going after each other instead of recognizing that, hey, it's us against the world. Like, if we don't have each other's back, nobody else is going to get my back the way that you can. And nobody else is going to get your back the way that I can. And we need to approach this as we're going to go after it together. And you have to have that mentality. And not let anything or anyone get in between the two of you. You know, you have that decision. And it's the same in your relationship with God. Are your outside circumstances going to drive a wedge between you and God? Or are you going to allow those outside circumstances, that pressure, to drive you closer, to drive you deeper into Jesus? And you have that same possibility in your marriage. Are you going to allow these outside circumstances to form a wedge between us? Or